If you love the History Extra podcast, make sure you follow us to keep up to date and get all the latest episodes. Thanks for your support, and I do hope you enjoy this episode.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/History Extra. Just go to Indeed.com/History Extra right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
This episode is brought to you by Twizzlers. Long day, late night, feeling a little bored? Twizzlers is the ultimate sidekick for any moment of the day, no matter what kind of day you're having. The perfect level of sweet and a fun excuse to sit back and relax. Unwind with Twizzlers. To buy now, visit Hersheyland.com/Twizzlers.
And welcome to the History Extra podcast from BBC History Magazine, Britain's best-selling history magazine. I'm Ellie Cawthorne. What do we actually know about the Vikings' exploration of North America in the 10th and 11th centuries? And what does the fierce battle that has raged over the legacy of these voyages tell us about modern America? Gordon Campbell, Emeritus Professor and Fellow in Renaissance Studies at the University of Leicester, considers these questions in his new book, Norse America. Here, in conversation with our production editor, Spencer Mizzen, Gordon discusses some of the most remarkable voyages of discovery in human history.
Gordon, your new book tells a story not only of the Norse exploration of North America in the 10th and 11th centuries, but also of the battle that's been fought over those explorations over the past 200 or 300 years. Why is the matter of what the Norse did or did not do in North America a millennium ago? Why has it proved such a bone of contention?
Well, in part, it's an argument about primacy. There's a difference between the way Europeans think about this and the way settler societies like America think about it. When you or I look at Stonehenge or a Scot looks at Skara Brae, we see our own remote past, even though the chances of our being related to the people in Stonehenge or Skara Brae are nil. Ours is a past of place. But when most Americans look at the Chaco Canyon ruins, the wonderful relics of a civilization in New Mexico, they don't see themselves there. They say, that's a Native American site. Very interesting. Because they see their own past in terms of the continents from which their ancestors came. They see themselves as Asian Americans or African Americans or Hispanic Americans, or more specific hyphenated identities, Polish Americans, Irish Americans, and so on. Now, the dominant empowered group are of English descent. So they just call themselves Americans. They are the real Americans in their minds. And Scandinavian Americans are now part of that mainstream. They just call themselves Americans. But in the past, they weren't. They were marginalized. They were relatively poor. They were hyphenated. So the contention that the Norse were the first Europeans to set foot in America, raised them up in the pecking order, and so entitled them to a higher standing than their present state. And the second side of that question, it is confessional. It's a claim for the descendants of North European Protestants, because we're talking WASPs, white Anglo-Saxon Protestants, having priority over South European Catholics, whose hero was, of course, Columbus. The adoption of Columbus as the discoverer is a related story, and it's equally thin. Columbus never conceived of the existence of North America, much less discovered it. He denied all until his dying day that he'd discovered a new continent. He insisted he'd discovered Asia. And the hard fact that the first European settlers in America were Spanish remains an uncomfortable truth for many Europeans of North European descent. So they celebrate the Mayflower because that's English settlers. But the fact that St. Augustine in Florida was established 60 years before that, there's complete silence about that. So that's why it matters. The Norse give legitimacy and status to people of North European descent.
And so when did the theory that the Norse may have settled North America first, when did that first emerge? And on what evidence was this theory based originally?
It pops up in the late 18th century as one of a host of theories. It pops up in the late 18th century, but there were many other theories current at the time, not including Columbus, oddly enough, because Columbus didn't become important until America became independent and they needed a non-English person to have discovered it. But it really comes to the fore, the Norse theory, when a bloke called Rasmus Andersen, or Andersen in Norwegian, published a book called America Not Discovered by Columbus. And that was in 1874. And it lent powerful support both to the historic contention that the Norse visited New England repeatedly from the 10th to the 14th centuries, and to the ancestral Teutonic link between the Norse and the New England cultural elite. And that's what did it. They had been given access to the sagas in the generation before, and the sagas could be read as historical accounts of the Norse having discovered America, and that settled that.
Now, can you give us some examples of the battles that were played out between sort of proponents of the idea that Columbus had got there first and those who supported the idea that the Norse had got there first? How was that played out over the following decades?
Well, the interesting period comes on the 400th anniversary of Columbus's so-called discovery, so 1492-1892. And it was decided that there should be a World's Columbian Exposition in Chicago. And they commissioned three replicas of Columbus's ships in Spain, and they were to be sailed across the Atlantic, just like Columbus did, only landing in New York rather than in the Caribbean. But a funny thing happened because a 9th century Viking ship called the Gokstad ship had been discovered 3 years previously. The Norwegians were invited to make a replica of that ship. So we had the prospect of Columbus's three ships sailing the Atlantic and a Viking ship sailed the Atlantic. Now, it turned out that the three Columbus ships weren't seaworthy, and they had to be towed across the Atlantic. whereas the Viking ship was seaworthy, and it came across the Atlantic with sail and oar propelling it. And the Scandinavians took huge advantage of this and represented the Spanish sailors as weaklings sailing unsailable ships, whereas the Norsemen were the mighty sailors battling the seas in an open ship and sailing successfully there. So when the Norse ship arrived in Chicago, it became a cuckoo in the Columbian nest, and they took full advantage of the publicity to trumpet the notion that the Norwegians had been there first. And that's when you get the arguments about, should America have a Columbus Day, or should it have a Leif Erikson Day to celebrate the fact that the Americans, the Norse, had got there first? That was the high point, and as it develops into the 20th century, the theories narrow, if you like, and are focused on local artifacts rather than being a national vision of an America discovered by the Norse.
So this Scandinavian boat, it provokes quite a lot of hostility, didn't it, among some American Catholics, Irish Catholic communities? Is that correct?
It is. It is. When the Viking ship started to sail from the coast up the Erie Canal to get to Chicago, well, first of all, the crew were arrested, and they said that this was all because New York police were Irish Catholics. So they presented it as a confessional argument. And as they proceeded up the canal, there were various hecklers on the bridges throwing stones at them and shouting at them for being representing the Church of Rome, which was trying to take over. It became a religious battle, if you like. That abated in some measure by the time it got to Chicago, and the hecklers had been silenced. But there was still a sense of hostility, which was more openly felt then than now, between Catholics and Protestants in America, and who had the prior claim and who should be on top.
Now, you're right that the idea that the Norse, quote-unquote, discovered North America was important for Scandinavian settlers, which is kind of understandable, I guess. But you also point out that it was important, too, for elites on the east coast of America. Now, why was that?
Well, there are separate arguments for the east coast elites and the Midwest. In the Midwest, places like Minnesota and Wisconsin were settled by poor farmers from Scandinavia. So for them, the discovery of a rune stone that they believed to be genuine, that showed that the Norse had arrived there in 1362, that suddenly vindicated them. And because the runestone had the letters AVM, Ave Virago Maria, Hail to the Virgin Mary, that meant they were good Catholics, so the Catholics grabbed it. And those are an entirely different set of reasons from the ones on the East Coast elites. They were WASPs, they were of English descent, as they imagined. So a writer like Charles Kingsley, that we know from Westward Ho and the Water Babies, said that the Anglo-Saxons, which were a female race, required impregnation by the great male race, the Norse. So the vacant earth in the form of an unpopulated America needed to be seeded by these Anglo-Saxons fortified by Viking blood. And that was the vindication for the East Coast elites championing the Vikings. And if you hear in that a kind of racial narrative that you find yourself uncomfortable with, then welcome aboard, because that is the origin of a racial narrative that has had very damaging articulations in the decades to come.
Now, you mentioned the sagas a little bit earlier. What do they tell us about Norse voyages to an exploration of North America? And should we give them much credence?
Well, the sagas are literature, though they've not always been read as literature. And there is a tendency to look in literature for truth. The classic example of this is, if I can offer an analogy, is Homer's Iliad. And in the 19th century, people assumed it was true that there had been armed conflicts in the area about 1200 years BCE. There was no archaeological evidence, and an archaeologist called Schliemann went off to the coast of Anatolia, and he dug, trying to find Troy. And he found some burnt wood and said, aha, we have evidence of a fire. He discovered precious objects and he said, this must be Priam's treasure. So in other words, he read the whole thing literally because he wanted to prove that the Iliad was true. Now, it's not true. Archaeologists no longer believe that. There may be elements of place, but there's no transmission of names and actions of individuals. The sagas are exactly the same. They describe journeys, and these descriptions are often taken to be logbooks, and they give measurements, and people have tried to plot the measurements of actual voyages by named historical individuals. It's possible that there was a chieftain called Eric the Red, around whom legends accumulated. It's possible, or it's getting a bit unlikely, that he had a son called Leif Erikson, or Leif the Lucky, as he's known. The notion that the other members of his family were historical is tough to defend. There are in Greenland many records of names of people who lived in Greenland, and not one of the names in the sagas has ever appeared in the historical record. So their voyages to Greenland, and then lands to the west of Greenland, as described in the sagas, may never have happened. Now, it's possible, of course, that these characters did exist. You can't tell, and that the sagas preserve shards of memory. In other words, these characters in the sagas exist in the liminal space between fact and fiction, and that's very uncomfortable for most people. That's why there's been an impulse to say they're real people. And, statues are erected of Leif in various places as if he were a real person. There are no statues of Eric the Red. He was a serial killer at best, so no one would want to promote him. Though, oddly enough, in Greenland, in the National Museum, there's a sign that says Greenland is, of course, part of North America. We speak the same language as our counterparts in Canada. And the first European to discover North America, or to arrive in North America, was not Leif the Lucky, but Eric the Red, because he came to Greenland, and that's what we are. So the sagas sit there. They're fiction. They have maybe bits of fact in them, but separating fact, trying to identify those historical shards, is an impossible task.
Still to come on the History Extra podcast.
But the real prize would be the discovery of a site on the North American mainland. That's what people are looking for, not because it matters in terms of the Norse, but because it matters in terms of Americans wanting to establish that link.
We don't always realise just how much our negative thoughts and experiences stick with us and weigh us down. You may find your brain constantly running through a highlight reel of bad moments. That comment your friend made last week that hurt your feelings. That frustrating thing your mum does. Or that silly thing you said in a meeting. Maybe it's time to get it all off your chest. Whether it's a tiny annoyance or something much bigger. Talking about it can give you some relief and lead you to a potential solution. That's where therapy comes in. It's a safe space to share whatever's weighing you down and learn to process it so your internal highlight reel can focus on the good stuff. And BetterHelp offers affordable online therapy on a schedule that works for you. Connect with a licensed therapist by text, phone, or video call. Start the process in minutes and switch therapists anytime. Let it out with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/historyextra today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/historyextra.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/History Extra. Just go to Indeed.com/History Extra right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This episode is brought to you by Twizzlers. Long day, late night, feeling a little bored. Twizzlers is the ultimate sidekick for any moment of the day, no matter what kind of day you're having. The perfect level of sweet and a fun excuse to sit back and relax. Unwind with Twizzlers. To buy now, visit Hersheyland.com/Twizzlers.
So what do we actually know about the Norse presence in North America in the 10th and 11th centuries? What is the archaeology telling us?
We know that the Norse arrived in Greenland in the late 10th century. And we know that that they lived there for 500 years. They disappeared mysteriously in the late 15th century. Shortly after they arrived, they began to travel in the high Arctic, in what is now the Canadian Eastern Arctic. So there are, for example, three Tula sites. The Tula are the ancestors of today's Inuit. On Ellesmere Island, way up in the north of Canada. And excavations there have revealed all kinds of Norse artifacts, mostly datable to the late 13th century. Chess pieces, chain mail, knife blades, there's all kinds of things. And these aren't trade goods. They're things that were on a ship. So in other words, there was either a shipwreck or there was an attack on a Norse ship in well into what is now Canada in the late 13th century. Where they'd gone for hunting and possibly for trading. That much is clear from the archaeological record. Moving south, the one solid site further south is in on the northern tip of Newfoundland, and it's called Lanceau Meadows. It was discovered in the 1960s, which was when my interest in all of this occurred. And it turns out to have been a kind of halfway house or a point where they could, an intermediate place, a transit camp, if you like, where boat crews could fix their ships and rest. There are three longhouses on the site, so three crews, and then there are sheds beside the longhouses where they could keep slaves and they could keep supplies of that kind of thing. And the evidence is that the site was occupied for about 10 years, around the year 1000. There's no graveyard, there's no church, so it clearly wasn't a long settlement. But if it was a transit camp, it means that they were going somewhere else. And that raises the question of a colony on the North American coast. Now, no archaeological evidence has ever been found of a colony. But the one hint is that this site in northern Newfoundland has three butternut shells. One of them is carved. And butternuts don't grow in Newfoundland and have never grown in Newfoundland, nor would the currents carry butternut shells, butternuts to Newfoundland. So in other words, the people that were in Newfoundland, the Norse people, must have been in a place where butternut trees grew. That could be the St. Lawrence Valley, it could be the Maritime Provinces of Canada, or it could be New England. So it is likely that somewhere on those coasts, there is a short-lived Norse settlement where butternut trees grew. But it's never been found, and so there's no archaeology to support the contention that they were ever there. The one exception is a coin. It's called the Main Penny, and it was found on the coast of Maine. It's a real penny. It's 10th century. It's filled with problems. It had a little circle cut out of the corner of it, so it was clearly worn around the neck. And those that want America to have been settled by the Vikings say, aha, this is the proof, they were there. But in fact, it was traded down from the coast of Labrador. It came probably through Greenland. So there is no archaeological evidence that the Vikings were ever in America.
I mean, do we know anything about the leaders of this expedition?
Not a thing. If we knew that that Leif Erikson was a historical person, then we could make him the leader. All we know is when Greenland was settled, when the Eastern Arctic was explored, when Lancel Meadows in Newfoundland was settled, but we cannot connect that responsibly with the sagas. So to say Leif Erikson lived here, it goes beyond what any responsible historian can say.
What were the chief challenges of establishing a settlement on the other side of the Atlantic, given the technology and resources that were available to the Norse explorers?
The principal difficulty was in numbers. If I can offer a military analogy, it's all about ever-thinning supply lines. The Icelandic settlements in Greenland, they were there for 500 years, but they never amounted to more than 2,500 to 3,000 people. That's not many people. In terms of expanding further to the west, well, the Norse site in northern Newfoundland could accommodate about 60 people. That's not a big number. If they did arrive in somewhere in North America, on the coast of Canada or the United States, of course, they would find that it was already populated, and the locals may have taken a dim view of these strange people wanting to settle on their land. So they may have been have been driven out by the locals. Further north, the attraction of the mainland, if you like, was different. In Labrador, there's no sign of a settlement, but Labrador had timber. And Greenland only had dwarf trees. It still only has very short trees. I've been to the National Arboretum in southern Greenland, and there's nothing more than 20 feet high. So they clearly travelled to the mainland to get timber for housing and for ships and that kind of thing. But that's not for settlement purposes. That's a different thing altogether.
And in terms of feats of seamanship, how impressive was the feat of getting across the Atlantic to North America?
Well, they didn't all make it. In the story of settling Greenland, for example, 25 ships set out, 14 ships make it. You know, what happened to the others? Well, they either sank, or they turned back. And the answer to the disappearance of the Greenland colony may well be that the ships, had some kind of catastrophe befell them, and they couldn't proceed. So there's the issue of the ships in the North Atlantic, which is not a calm place to be for much of the year. The second thing is that the Norse didn't have maps, and they couldn't calculate longitude, but they were very good at calculating latitude. And it's interesting to see when they're going from Iceland to Greenland, for example, they've got a route because they can follow a line of latitude. There's also a primitive sort of compass that was found some years ago, which is now in the National Museum in Denmark, which suggests they had some instrumentation. But the hardest fact, of course, is they didn't know where they were going. There was no pull towards America. America was not their destiny. It was where the dog trail petered out, if you like. It was the limit of expansion. So it's not a case of Vikings going in stages across the North Atlantic to their destiny. It's a case of farmers. They were peasant farmers. They weren't warriors. Escaping, well, maybe looking for new land, but escaping religious conflict, because this new religion of Christianity came along and that caused problems. Escaping battles between warring chieftains. They were just looking for a quiet life so they could farm. They had boats that were immensely seaworthy, but they were open boats. They could be swamped, and they were swamped on occasion. So in a way, it's a little miracle that they made it at all across to the North Atlantic, across to the North American shore. But they did make it. The notion that they were somehow pulled there is an American fantasy. So if you look in front of the wonderful cathedral in Reykjavik, there's a statue of Leif Erikson, the discoverer of America. And if you go around the back of it and look to see, you know, where did this statue come from, it was paid for by the Americans, because the Americans see discovering America as the point of it all. But the Icelanders have no reason to think that way. Similarly, in Greenland, in the place where Eric the Red's farm is deemed to be, if he existed. There's another statue of Leif Erikson put up by Norwegian Americans who again want it all to be a story about America. But for the Norse, it wasn't a story about America. It was a story about the settlement of Iceland and the settlement of Greenland. And it really stops there for them.
Do you believe that what we've discovered so far and our current knowledge is the tip of the iceberg? Is there a lot more out there to be discovered, do you think, about what the Norse accomplished in North America 1,000 years ago?
There may be more sites. There was the possibility of a site in southern Newfoundland that was discovered some years ago. There may be trading posts on Baffin Island, and that would be exceedingly interesting were that to happen, because that would establish that the Norse weren't just hunters, they were traders as well. They were in the ivory business. But those sites, for various reasons, have not been followed up. I hope they will be someday. But the real prize would be the discovery of a site on the North American mainland. That's what people are looking for, not because it matters in terms of the Norse, but because it matters in terms of Americans wanting to establish that link. And that link right now cannot be proven. There are lots of attempts to prove it. I was in Nova Scotia a couple of years ago, where there's another bogus runestone, and I managed to walk on the Leif Erikson Trail. And that was the trail where the great man himself had wandered into the town and discovered North America. So there's all kinds of fantasy attached to it. And what they would really love is a real archaeological site.
So to what extent has fake archaeology been an issue in our endeavours to establish what really happened?
Fake archaeology is it's helpful to think of it as a spectrum. There are real artifacts that have been tendentiously interpreted as Norse. So there's a 17th century windmill near Newport in Rhode Island, which is said to be a Norse church. Now, it's a real artifact, but it's not what they say it is. In fact, it's a copy of a windmill near Leamington Spa. But they say it's a church. There are also real Norse artifacts that have been planted fraudulently. So the Beardmore relics, which is a sword and an axe head, said to have been found in the Canadian province of Ontario, in fact, weren't from there at all. They came from the collection of a 19th century Norwegian. And so they were real artifacts, but they were fake discoveries. Further along, there are fake relics on a large scale. The runestones that crop up all over America in areas of Scandinavian settlement, and the Vinland map now at Yale. And those are, some of them are made for the simple purpose of deceit. Some are creating an imagined bit of evidence for a past that they really know is true, and there isn't any evidence, so they make the evidence. So it matters as part of the argument. But in fact, the fake runestones are historically important, not because they document the Norse, but because they document the thinking of Scandinavian Americans in the 19th century and their search for legitimacy and their search for an identity. So I'm not inclined to be very hard on them. They're not very sophisticated frauds. But they are frauds, and they play large in the imagination of those that want America to have been discovered by the Norse.
And finally, given the way that Native Americans are sometimes being written out of the story,
yes.
How important is it that we get this history right, that we put out the facts rather than the fiction?
The various attempts to show that the Norse and indeed other claimants arrived in America first are all about displacing the legitimacy of Native Americans. Indeed, some go so far as to say that the Native Americans aren't Native Americans at all. They came from Europe. They're the lost tribes of Israel, and that kind of thing. But throughout the narratives, there is a sense, in particularly in America, that the Native Americans are illegitimate occupiers of the territory. And that they're recent. So there are mounds, for example, very interesting mounds. I've climbed a few of them myself in America. They were clearly built by a sophisticated society. And when the Europeans arrived and they looked at these mounds, said, well, it clearly couldn't be the Indians because they're lazy and unimaginative. So it must have been a previous society that was a great society, and the present indigenous Americans are newcomers. So there's a deep racist myth that seeks to justify everything from the Indian Removal Act that displaced Indians on the coast to various attempts to present the locals as savages as opposed to civilized Europeans. And that's not just harmless nonsense, it's pernicious nonsense, because it produces a narrative that legitimizes the expropriation of American lands and indeed the dignity of Native Americans. So I don't regard the Norse story as an entirely harmless one at all. I think it's a central plank in the racist marginalization of Native Americans, who deserve much better. They did not ask to be conquered.
That was Gordon Campbell. Norse America, The Story of a Founding Myth, is out now, published by Oxford University Press. You can find plenty more on Viking history at historyextra.com. And if you're interested in medieval history more generally, then make sure you sign up for our medieval newsletter at historyextra.com/newsletters. Thanks for listening. This podcast was produced by Ben Hewitt and Jack Bateman. Tomorrow, we'll have an episode on the power players of the Italian Renaissance.